You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
On The Breakfast Grill this morning, we have ISO Secretary General Rob Steele. ISO, or International Organization for Standardization, has long been considered a global benchmark in terms of quality control, more specifically in the terms of mechanical and technical standard. Founded in 1947, it has since published more than 19,500 international standards that range from food safety to manufacturing to healthcare. But the important question to ask now, in the terms of business, you know, what does it actually mean to be ISO compliant? Good morning, Rob. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Nadia. Thank you.
Well, in terms of ISO as a standard, everybody recognizes it because you see it everywhere. You know, people regularly claim that there is certain ISO standard compliance. You know, it actually helps open up companies to, you know, to make them globally, to give them a global standard and, you know, confidence and credibility with customers. But in some cases, do you think people really understand what it means to be ISO compliant?
No, not necessarily. I think some people want to have a certificate on the wall. And I think there's so much more to it than that. I think having compliance to an international standard is a way of opening markets. It's also a way of improving your business. So the contents of a standard have been developed by an internationally recognized group of experts, putting their expertise into a standard. There's so much richness in a standard that you can use to improve your business. So, you know, using standards not just to have the certificate on the wall, but to be able to increase sales, to become more efficient and decrease costs, and therefore to increase your bottom line, is actually where the real benefit of those standards are.
Well, you do have a lot of studies on the website about the benefits of ISO. But you were mentioning it increases to bottom line numbers is one of the main things that ISO gives. What real world examples do you have? You know, how much average, of course, they've given different industries, but how much average do you see people who are ISO compliant bottom line increase?
That's a very difficult question to answer. And so let me give you a couple of concrete examples. A small company in Peru that grows asparagus using international standards was able to open up new markets. They were able to ship their asparagus into the North American market and into the European market. As a result, they had 5% compound growth in sales over a 10-year period. They were able to have a significant improvement in their bottom line. And using other ISO standards, they were able to introduce social responsibility into the way in which they operated, which had huge flow-on effects in terms of reducing the cost of employment. People really enjoyed working there, so did their families because of the benefits they were getting, and they were therefore able to reduce their employment costs as well. So there's a very simple example of international standards being able to open up markets and therefore increase sales, other international standards being able to improve the efficiency of the organization, including recruitment costs, and this just adding to the bottom line.
Well, can some industries actually sit to be ISO compliant? When it's originally started out, it was for technical standards. You know, ultimately, you want to make sure that the screw you buy can hold up the shelf. You know, that's as simple as it. But you have standards for things like accounting, certain bodies, social responsibility. You know, how do you put a standard against some things that are so esoteric?
Yeah, you're right. ISO started just after the Second World War, and as you just said, you know, you need the screw to do what it says it's going to do. In the home, hold up the shelf on the wall. In industry, it sounds really small, but making sure that the nut and the bolt actually fit together properly. And in industry, that's really important. One of the things that you want to do is you want to standardize your nuts and bolts, quite literally. In the automotive sector, for example, to be able to have the same nut and bolt across your supply chain and across your model range gives you significant economies of scale and therefore increased profitability. But to your question about social responsibility, ISO develops standards in response to market need. It must be internationally market relevant. The call for a standard on social responsibility actually came from emerging economies who wanted to have a level playing field. And by that I mean a common definition of what it is to be socially responsible. So here's an international standard that offers a international definition of social responsibility.
That means that you are saying that most of the standards you develop come as a result of the members that you have. You have about 164 members. But the fact is, the part of the funding actually comes from these members. The others is selling the standards. So why do you answer the criticism that people just, you know, you just want to make more standards to get more revenue? How do you keep ISO independent, you know, from the needs of your members in that sense?
Yeah, so ISO's role is to develop standards. It's not to provide certification services or other ways of proving compliance to the standard. Very good reason for that. Exactly as you said, we're in the business of developing standards in response to industry particularly need, but not just industry. It's industry, consumers, government, academia, and what have you. So because we've got around 164 members, those members reach out to their stakeholders. And their stakeholders are those groups I just mentioned, industry, government, etc. So here in Malaysia, Standards Malaysia is the ISO member. And Standards Malaysia provides that pivot, if you like, between Malaysian industry, Malaysian government, Malaysian academia, Malaysian consumers to developing ISO standards. So to summarize, we only develop standards. We don't provide certification to those because we need to be independent and we need to be seen to be independent in the way in which we develop those standards.
Well, in terms of membership fees, do your members actually give you more funds if they actually manage to branch out the number of sectors that they are ISO compliant? Is that how they pay you more member fees?
The main driver for calculating ISO's membership fees is the level of economic activity of the country relative to global economic activity. So if the GDP of the world was, you know, say 100 and Malaysia's portion of that was 5, then you would pay 5/100 of the membership fee. It is driven a little bit by the number of technical committees that Malaysia or other members participate in, but it's not the major driver. The major driver is economic activity, because the major reason ISO is developing standards is for economic activity.
Well, we mentioned 164 countries, that means 164 members. Do you actively recruit more members?
In the past, we have, but those 164 countries now represent something like 98% of the world's gross national income and 97% of the world's population. So I think it's reasonable to claim that we're an international standards organization. I'm more concerned now that those members that we do have actually become more active in the subject areas that are of interest to the country. So here in Malaysia, it's great to see the involvement of Standards Malaysia in getting involved in the technical work of ISO. So ISO has over 220 separate subject areas. No country can be across all of those subject areas. But what are the subject areas that are going to be of interest to Malaysia and Malaysians? And one of the reasons I'm here is to try and encourage greater involvement, particularly of industry and consumers in ISO's work where it's relevant to them.
On The Breakfast Grill this morning, we have ISO Secretary General Rob Steele. After this, we'll talk about how the organisation will keep up with the times and the new markets it's looking at.
Beyond frivolous mishmash, BFM 89.9.
Today on The Breakfast Grill, we have ISO Secretary General Rob Steele. Now, Rob, we were last talking about how you have quite a number of categories of ISO grades. You actually have on your website a site saying, you know, your most popular ISOs. But, you know, we go back to the fact that it was originally for manufacturing standards, the example of the screw and the shelf again. But do you think that because it's spread over so many different industries, that it actually starts to lose the meaning and the credibility of it? Of course, like you were saying, it was judged by your members. They asked you for the standard. But do you think there's a point where you can say, stop, we will not standardize everything?
Definitely we shouldn't standardize everything. A couple of examples. Standards are a great base for innovation. Yeah, it's no point in inventing the next new thing, but if you're innovating off a base that's not solid, that's not tested in the market, and I think standards provide that great base. I think standards can also lock in innovation, but standards shouldn't get in the way of the innovative process. And so I think there's a time when standards are appropriate. The second point, I think, is we are responding to the increasing complexity of business today. If you went back 30 years, the business of business was business. In other words, let's make a buck. Today, business needs to be far more responsive, because it's good business, to the environment and to social issues. No business today can ignore these issues. The consumer won't let them do that. So there is an increasing need to respond to that complexity by providing, from an ISO perspective, from an international perspective, international norms by which industry can operate. If you take the example of Apple, for example, Apple is has long been recognized as a very profitable, very innovative company. And they rely on global supply chains. And it was very unfortunate that, you know, they get criticism about the work practices of some of their suppliers. So they have to, just like any other business, has to be far more socially aware of the consequences of what they do and what their suppliers do, and far more conscious of the impact of the environment, because the consumer today is actually far more aware of these issues. So, long way of getting to the point. My point is that business today needs to manage complexity, and I think international standards can respond to that. And I think the way in which we do that as ISO provides an enabler for international trade, so that, for example, Malaysian business is not hung up in trying to penetrate new markets by having different standards, you know, for environmental or societal as well as economic issues.
But do you think that because it's quite so wide and includes such a wide swath that people don't hold as much weight in this ISO rating anymore as it used to?
I don't think so. We develop voluntary standards. So it's up to the market to pick up those standards that are relevant to those, to them. Every standard that we develop needs to pass a market relevance test, but that doesn't mean that industry needs to pick up every standard. For example, if you're in the nuclear industry, you're going to have a certain set of standards that you're going to be interested in. But if you're in, I don't know, growing flowers or something like that, most of those standards would be completely irrelevant.
Well, looking at that, talking about evaluation, you just develop the standards, but you don't actually follow up. That's for the other party to make sure that people meet the standards. But in the cases where a company says it's ISO certified, but something goes wrong, a building falls down, the shelf doesn't hold, you will have backlash. So how do you make sure that the standards that you publish are still being kept up to a certain degree?
There's two ways. First of all, if the standard is proving to be deficient, because we've missed something, or because technology has evolved, then we can revise that standard. And we have a process that calls on ISO to revise standards, to look at our standards every 5 years. So that's the absolute maximum that a standard can last in the marketplace before we look at it.
But you can't sort of twist the people's hands and say, comply to this in a way.
No, we can't. And in that respect, and to answer this question quite directly, we have very good relationships with other organizations that are responsible for certification and accreditation. In other words, good implementation of those standards. So to your point, ISO shouldn't just stand back and say, we only develop the standard and it's up to somebody else to pick it up. I believe ISO has a very strong responsibility to encourage, and I use the word deliberately, encourage good implementation of standards. And I think you can do that in two ways. The first, to go back to your earlier question, show the real benefits of standards. It's not the certificate on the wall, it's the impact that you can have on your business by properly implementing that standard. And secondly, where we are become aware of the cowboys, to actually encourage those parts of the standards and conformance infrastructure, the certification industry, the accreditation industry, to take action, because it hurts everybody. It hurts ISO and our brand reputation. It hurts the certification industry. And most of all, it hurts industry, because those that actually have a certificate and are having good implementation of that standard, I think deserve recognition from those who've just bought the certificate and don't really care.
Well, talking about emerging markets as being one of the new areas you were talking about, and of course your members, part of them are emerging markets. Some people actually criticize that ISO is developed countries imposing their view on developing nations. What do you say to a criticism like that?
I think it's time the developed world recognized that the developing world is a major market, and I think they're doing that. But this is a two-way street. The developing world and the developing country members of ISO make up 75% of our total membership. We operate on the basis of one country, one vote. And I think where it matters, the developing world and our developing members need to stand up and say, we want this standard and we're going to get actively involved in it. I think it's all very well to criticize, and some of that criticism is absolutely valid, but I think it's now is the time for action. Now is the time for the developing world to get involved in international standards and say, we want this standard and it needs to be globally relevant, not just relevant to the developed world. And I think that's the power of ISO. We do make sure that any standard we develop is globally relevant, not just relevant to the developed world, relevant to the world.
So talking about globally relevant, so there will be things that you will not love. I mean, let's use a very simplistic example, roots on a tree. Everybody should say it should be a certain length. You will not go into those kinds of standards just because somebody asks you to.
No, there's got to be some value to developing that standard. In your example, I don't see the value that an international standard is going to provide.
Yeah. So for certain markets, the emerging markets again, what are the new sectors you're looking to sort of put the ISO stamp on?
So let me just read a couple of examples that I have of new technical groups and new subject areas that we've actually put in place in the last 5 years. We have a group looking at fraud countermeasures. We have a group looking at traditional Chinese medicine. Another group looking at sustainability of event management, and actually that group has developed a standard which was used at least in part for the London Olympics. We have safety of amusement rides, a standard on additive manufacturing, which is 3D printing effectively, a standard on sustainable development in communities, a subject area on customer contact centres, and the list goes on. My point here is if you kind of can mentally picture that list is being put in place, and those technical groups are being put in place as a result of either new technologies, convergence of technologies, or market need. So these are all very new areas for ISO, and I think actually very exciting.
Chinese herbal medicines, for example, that can you actually have a standard? Because the effects are not as easily measured as you do with like certain kinds of man-made drugs in a way. So in that case, how does ISO play its part to make sure nobody gets the burn out of the stick?
Yeah, and it's quite a controversial subject. What is Chinese medicine? What is traditional Chinese medicine? The reason the standard and this group was formed was two reasons. One, the use of traditional Chinese medicine is going global and has been going global for some time. And so from a consumer protection perspective, it's really important that we have a common international understanding of what we mean by traditional Chinese medicine. A second reason is that we've got a market issue here. Those people who are truly putting traditional Chinese medicine in place should be differentiated from those that are, you know, putting the label in place but actually not using that. Again, this is protection of business, you know, what is good business, and protection for the consumer. And so a common international understanding of what is meant by traditional Chinese medicine, quote unquote, is important for the marketplace and for the consumer.
Well, ISO is not the only body in the world that does standardization. You know, how do you remain relevant compared to the others who do the same thing?
I think we need to show our international reach. The fact that we are in 164 countries, the fact that industry, consumers and government and academia and the like can contribute from 164 countries, I think, is a key point. And this comes back to organizations like the World Trade Organization, who look to international standards as an enabler of trade. You know, by definition, if you have the same standard agreed across the world, then this is an enabler of trade. If you have different standards for the same product in different markets, then this is de facto a barrier to trade.
Do you see adding any more new countries from the developing world this year, or you're just all right with the 164 members so far?
ISO is always open to new members. That's clear. But I think ISO's priority now is to get those members that we do have, we've got a lot, to increase their participation in the technical work, because it's in the interests of the industry in their country. So, you know, can we provide facilities to help them get more engaged? Can we provide IT tools? You know, a lot of the standards meetings are held in Europe or North America or places remote to this part of the world. So can we introduce WebEx to cut travel costs, you know, virtual meetings? Can we make sure that the standards bodies themselves have all of the tools and what have you to engage with stakeholders? That's our emphasis at the moment.
Well, because the world is so fast changing, has there ever been times when a standard just doesn't make sense anymore and you have no qualms about pulling it or amending it, on the so to speak?
Yeah. Absolutely. We look at our standards. The maximum length of time that a standard can go without review in the ISO system is 5 years. So if there's a need to revise the standard before that, then obviously we would do that. But at least every 5 years, we will, if you like, walk up to the standard, say, is this still relevant? And we will do one of three things. Either we confirm it. It doesn't need any change. So, for example, if you have a standard for bricks, for example, you may not need to revise the standard every 5 years. Do we need to withdraw the standard? It's no longer needed. It's been overtaken by technology. It's not. It's no longer relevant. Let's withdraw it. Or should we add to it? So there's a definite review and questioning period every 5 years at least.
Well, we've had on the Breakfast Grill with us this morning ISO Secretary General Rob Steele. Thank you very much, Rob, for being on the show.
Thanks, Nadia.
I'm Nadia Hassan for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by the CIMB Group, Southeast Asia's leading universal bank. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.